Crazy Horse was the greatest Indian war of the 19th century, best known for defeating General Custer and the 7th Cavalry at the Battle of Little Bighorn in 1876, the worst defeat inflicted on the frontier army. His death, while he was in federal custody, has remained a matter of controversy for more than a century, and Pulitzer Prize winner Thomas Paris has written about it, calling his book The Killing of Crazy Horse. It's published by Knopf. I'm very pleased that it brings Thomas Paris back to our show today. Hello.
Hello. It's nice
I'm
to
going
be
to
here.
Begin with a very obvious question. In the past, we've discussed your books on the history of intelligence organizations. There was Intelligence Wars, American Secret History from Hitler to Al-Qaeda, Heisenberg's War, The Secret History of the German Bomb, The Man Who Kept the Secrets, Richard Helms, and the CIA. This is a major departure for you, isn't it?
It might look that way, but if you think about the word secret for a minute, you'll see what ties them together. I tend to get drawn towards things that are hidden.
So does WikiLeaks have any documents about the death of Crazy Horse?
Not a one. WikiLeaks seems to have documents about an awful lot of subjects. But in this case, you have to go much further back into a wide range of libraries and archives where all the various documents are. But after Crazy Horse was killed in 1877, everybody involved understood that something unnecessary and deeply wrong had occurred, and they started to explain it. They started to put down their version of the facts. So there's quite a lot of material out there, but nobody had ever gone to kind of gather it together. There was never an accounting.
Now, was it accurate or was it a lot of rationalizing? Because this is a period of great moral ambiguity.
It was, on the whole, very accurate. There are certain things that are a little fuzzy, but typically I find that when people go to the trouble of putting down their memory of an event, very often it's true, at least from their point of view. It's what they remember about it, it's what they saw, what they think. I ran across one real fabrication in all of this material that I looked at from one military officer who kind of made up some dying words of Crazy Horse to justify the killing. But that's the only thing I ever found that was really fabricated.
In your introduction, you read about choosing to play the Indian in childhood games of cowboys and Indians. So that start you off with a certain kind of sympathy for your subject here?
Oh, it did indeed. And I can tell you that Indians are still the overlooked part of American history. It's not that Native Americans are no longer paid attention to. They're very active politically, and they're very active in a lot of other ways. But their role in American history is, to a large extent, overlooked. Their role in the Revolution, the War of 1812, the Western Wars, where we acquired vast territories by dispossessing the people who lived there, that's not something that people typically look at.
And there were certain tribes that whose names come up a lot more than others, Apache, Sioux, Oglala. Why them?
They fought. And the people who put up a fight, they get two things. First of all, they get noticed. Second of all, people are a little bit more careful with them. You wouldn't want to anger all the Sioux in the 1880s or the 1890s in a way that you might be perfectly willing to anger all the Chippewas and all the Ojibwas because they're not a fighting people or they'd pass the fighting stage. The Sioux and the Apaches, they fought.
They also had reasons to fight. There were treaties that were being broken. They tried the other approach, and they said, okay, we'll sign this treaty, and then gold would be discovered, and the next thing you knew, the treaty was being broken because it was Washington said, well, you know, we want the gold.
Gold is a powerful driver, and the gold in question here is the gold discovered by George Armstrong Custer in the Black Hills in 1874. And that discovery came at a time when the United States was in a deep depression after the Panic of 1873, and it was hoped somehow that this infusion of gold would revive the economy. And as it happened, the Black Hills were in the Sioux Reservation, the territory that had been granted to the Sioux. So the government in Washington, under President Grant, tried to extinguish the Sioux title and to force them to sell the land, and the Sioux simply refused. They just simply said no. And at that point, Washington decided they were going to force all these Indians onto reservations.
General George Crook was a key player in the frontier battles with Indians. Where was he getting his orders from?
He was getting all the orders that came down the chain of command. He was in Washington in December of 1875, which is the moment when war was decided upon in the White House. And then Crook came west and was part of the military campaign of that following summer.
But you write that he tried to live by the policy in his negotiations with Indians of not making promises he couldn't keep.
Well, that was his theory.
Was he able to live by that?
You know, he broke his own rules quite often. He took them seriously. He was a man of honor. But at the same time, he was a man, a prickly sort of a guy. He hated defiance. He hated sullen resentment or resistance. He didn't like it when Indians resisted him and just sort of wouldn't do what he wanted them to do. That raised his dander seriously.
Yeah, like get off your land because we want the gold.
Essentially, yeah. At the end there, in the last weeks of Crazy Horse's life, Crook wanted him to go to Washington and wanted him to talk to the president and wanted him to become a leader of the Sioux for peace, which meant accommodation with whites.
Now, Crazy Horse was a leader. He was the Oglala war chief, wasn't he?
He was.
Where does that stand in the tribal hierarchy? Where does it stand in relation to Sitting Bull, for example?
It's too complicated to explain. But very briefly, to be a war chief is quite different from being a political chief. And you have a wide range of authorities as a war chief. But these offices were not fully defined and not nailed down at difference. Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse knew each other. They trusted each other. They were allies. But neither one could command the other.
Mm. And how did someone like Crazy Horse become a war chief? Was it an elected office? Was it an inherited office?
All of the above. It starts off by just making a name for yourself, by being noticed. Wichasa Yatapika, men that are talked about. At a very young age, Crazy Horse was one of the men that were talked about for his war exploits, also his hunting exploits, his natural leadership abilities.
What about his exploits at home? He was married three times.
He was married three
times. It was
easy
to get a divorce in this culture?
Extremely easy. I mean, as people moved in together, they were married. If they separated, they were no longer married. But it was always considered a marriage. I mean, a woman might be married to one man for 4 days and another for 10 years and a third for 30 years. They're all considered to be marriages.
Wasn't he assaulted by one of his spurned wives?
He was assaulted by the husband of one of his wives. He stole a woman from a man named No Water. I mean, she ran away with him voluntarily, but No Water chased him down, ran into his lodge carrying a borrowed pistol, and shot Crazy Horse in the face.
And did that that cause permanent damage?
It did cause permanent damage. One of the reasons we know that most photographs that claim to be of Crazy Horse are not of Crazy Horse is because they don't show the scar tissue left by that wound. He didn't die. No Water thought initially that he had killed Crazy Horse in this very dramatic moment, but it turned out that he had not. Crazy Horse survived.
My guest is Thomas Powers, whose latest book is The Killing of Crazy Horse. It is published by Knopf. Can you walk us through the battle with Custer at Little Bighorn in 1876? It seems like it was pretty easy for Crazy Horse to rout Custer.
It wasn't so easy. You got to understand that Custer was a kind of a battlefield genius. He had a great natural gift for what's called battlefield plunging, for making tactical maneuvers at just the right moment on a battlefield. But Crazy Horse also had that ability.
Had he studied the tactics of the U.S. Army?
Well, he had fought them on many occasions, so he was deeply familiar with the way they actually behaved and how they operated. And he was the man most responsible for the defeat of Custer and killing Custer. And that's the reason that the Army feared him and was angry at him, and basically the reason why they killed him.
His warriors were less afraid of death, you suggest. There's a kind of an almost a philosophical, spiritual thing that goes on there. Did they have better warriors?
A very deep warrior culture.
It wasn't a death wish, you say, but something
similar. It's not a death wish, but it's a willingness to die. It's a readiness to die. It's a little bit like the Japanese Bushido code. Warrior cultures tend to confront death and to accept death. But there were two very different armies fighting each other here, two different groups of warriors. The Indians were professional fighters. That's all they did all their lives. The conscript army and the volunteer army of the 7th Cavalry that Custer led was made up of Irishmen and Germans primarily. Many of them had never been on a horse before they joined his unit. They got very little training. They were not good marksmen. They were not trained in battlefield technique. They learned as they went. And in their case, of course, they didn't go very far.
And then Crazy Horse did have some interesting tactics in this battle.
He attacked Custer's men at a delicate point where they were kind of separated into two pieces, and he split them into two separate bunches. And at that moment, Custer's organized resistance comes to an end, and the battle is essentially over. Within a very few minutes, all of Custer's men were dead with him on a hillside.
How many of the Indians died?
210 whites died, and about 30 to 40 Indians died in that fight.
So that's a terrible defeat.
It was a huge defeat.
The biggest single defeat of the frontier army?
And very shocking to the whole country. The news of it arrived roughly on the 4th of July, 1876, the centennial day, as well as the centennial year. The whole country was deeply shocked that a man like Custer could have been defeated by an Indian at that point none of them had heard of.
Crazy Horse promised that the victory at Little Bighorn would mean that they may not trouble us anymore. But it was only a year later that he himself was killed. So what happened between 1876 and 1877?
They talked it through and they thought it through. And all of the chiefs pretty much agreed that there was no point in trying to resist the whites. There were too many of them. They were too strong. They were actually wise. They could have put up a much longer fight, but they realized it was pointless and it would only injure the people. So they surrendered.
And then Crazy Horse worked as an Army scout, didn't he?
He was enlisted as an Army scout for a very brief period of time. Lieutenant William Philo Clark, who thought he was smart enough to work Indians and could get these people to serve as scouts and be under his thumb, had recruited him. But it didn't last long.
And why was that? Just because there were different philosophical approaches here?
It was basically because the Army became alarmed that Crazy Horse was going to go back to war. And they were largely encouraged in that belief by rival chiefs who resented Crazy Horse's popularity with young men. And they came to the Army officers with rumors and whispers of plots and plans to break away and join Sitting Bull in Canada. It became more and more suspicious. And all those suspicions mixed with those angers and those fears eventually led to an attempt to arrest him and send him to Florida to a federal prison. And when he realized what they were doing, he made a last-minute attempt to escape.
What was the charge?
There was no charge. The charge
was just, let's get rid of this guy.
Essentially, yeah, there's no charge.
And then how was he killed?
He tried to break away when they brought him to the guardhouse and started to put him into the cell in the guardhouse. And he struggled his way outside despite being held by many people. And there a army soldier with a fixed bayonet stabbed him in the lower back. It pierced his kidneys, and over the next 4 or 5 hours, he gradually died.
Why has this been a matter of controversy ever since?
It's a controversy because the killing took place while he was in federal custody. It's very hard to distinguish this killing from a crime. There was no legal justification for holding him or trying to imprison him. And at the moment of the killing, the officers on the scene told all the Indians around that Crazy Horse had actually stabbed himself and that he was injured in an attempt to escape by his own knife. And then a second story was circulated that he fell against the bayonet, that nobody had tried to kill him. So there's an attempt right from the beginning to conceal what had actually happened. But what had actually happened was that they wanted to get rid of him, and they didn't really too much care how they did it.
And did the Indians believe the story?
There was a great deal of confusion at the actual moment. There were a very intense crush of people, 1,000 or more people all around in a very small area. Very hard to see what had happened. So they didn't know. They didn't know what had happened. But the word gradually leaked out, and it became apparent that he had been killed in the attempt to escape.
Did he become an immediate hero of even the Indians who didn't like him? There's a Crazy Horse memorial that was carved in the 40s. It's a carved head that's larger than the heads on Mount Rushmore, isn't it?
It's huge. A Polish sculptor came up with a plan to put up a big Indian likeness in the hills south of Rapid City. And a man named Henry Standing Bear suggested that, who knew Crazy Horse, suggested that Crazy Horse would be a good subject. But there are no likenesses of Crazy Horse, no photographs. So the sculptor said that the best he could do was to reproduce the spirit of Crazy Horse. And if you look at the mountain, it looks very Slavic. This is the Polish Crazy Horse.
So where do you go from here? I mean, you've done all of these books on the intelligence community, and now suddenly you jump back 100 years, or more than 100 years, to deal with the Indian Wars. Are you going to stay in the past, or are you going to come back closer to the present?
Well, I'm going to come back closer to the present. I've started work on a book about my father. And he took a trip down the Mississippi River when he was 14 years old with his 9-year-old brother, the two of them in a rowboat. They were on the river for about 3 weeks. And the amazing thing to me from the beginning is the fact that their mother let them go. There's a lot of story in my father's youth that I think would
But I would have thought that, forgive me for returning to WikiLeaks, I'm sure many people have been asking you about it, that the release of all those documents would be driving historians like you crazy.
You know, there's an awful lot of documents out there.
There's a feeding frenzy, isn't
there? There is. There are a lot of secrets in this world. You can't penetrate all the secrets. I've wrestled with two or three very difficult, intractable ones, and I feel that I've sort of done all I can in that particular direction, and I'd like to do something different.
Mm. So you've moved from being a more of a journalist to being more of a historian memoirist?
I guess so. But, you know, as I said in the beginning, I'm drawn to things that are hidden. And like most men, my father was a largely hidden man.
In the end, how would you assess Crazy Horse? Is he somebody we should admire?
Absolutely. He had this great natural gift. He was wise. He did not resist when it made no sense. He had a fierce spirit of resistance and defiance. He was not easily suborned. He's an admirably strong, independent man.
And if he had remained alive, do you think he would have joined Sitting Bull with Buffalo Bill as an entertainer?
It's impossible for me to imagine Crazy Horse appearing with Buffalo Bill in front of Queen Victoria, but who knows?
Thomas Power's latest book is The Killing of Crazy Horse. It is published by Knopf, and it has been my great pleasure to talk with him once again. Thank you so much.
Thank you.